And now it's time for a Geek Speak with
GK Technologies,
Sarah and Jody.
In the fields again. I just can't wait to get in the fields again. The life I love is spreading potash for my friends. And I can't wait to get in the fields again. No, I can't wait to get in the fields again.
Welcome back to A Geek Speak. And on today's episode, we have a really fascinating episode today. We're going to have a conversation today with Josh Stutrud from Barton, North Dakota, which is northwest of Rugby, apparently population 12. Five of those people happen to be Josh's family. So we're just really honored to have somebody from Barton, North Dakota here with us today. How are you, Josh?
Good. Thanks for having me.
That's awesome. So you've used a lot of precision agriculture and you raise a lot of barley. And so you've been using precision agriculture to try to help figure out some things with nitrogen use efficiency and all kinds of different things. So it's going to be a really interesting conversation today about some of those items. Let me just ask you a little bit, just to get started. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, how you got started farming, and where your interest in precision agriculture came from?
Yeah, so I guess sixth generation farmer in the family in Pierce County, North Dakota. And then background why I got started farming was my dad was also, when he came back to the farm from college, he had an ag education degree. So he taught part-time ag education in Willow City, which is 8 miles, 9 miles north of Barton. And when he taught until 2000, quit teaching, went full-time farming. And then in 2006, an out-of-state landlord that we were renting some land from had a different tenant that was going to retire, and he was looking for somebody to rent it. And my dad kind of reached out and asked me if I'd be interested in farming, starting farming. I think that was my seventh grade, when I was about seventh or eighth grade, somewhere in there. So I started farming and renting a quarter of land in seventh or eighth grade. And that's how I kind of got started, was through an FFA project, through an SAE project. And then it also just led to me being more interested in the farming operation. It also kind of helped me get the learning curve of different jargon or acronyms that are commonly used, whether it be in any kind of business components or even going to the FSA office and different things like that. So it was a great opportunity to start at a young age to become more adapted to it.
That's awesome. So that's pretty neat that you got into it through FFA. FFA has just surfaced all kinds of great farmers throughout the day. And I, you know, I think Jody even shared a picture of you guys when you were in high school wearing your blue jackets. That was really fun to see. So Jody and Josh know each other from a previous life here.
I think that was from 2011. Yeah. Which is terrifying to think that was 13 years ago.
And that's when she beat me for the baby bison in crop judging. I think I got like fifth or sixth, but.
That's awesome. That's why she's my teammate. She's so awesome.
Those are my glory days.
So has precision agriculture always been part of what you've been doing and with your farming operation, or how did you get into precision agriculture?
Yeah. So I have to give a lot of credit to my dad and a lot of credit to good friend of his is Jamie Melgard. And Jamie, probably, I don't know, easiest thing I can talk about is auto steer. When it was kind of first coming out, early 2000 ish timeframe, Jamie had a customer, say late 90s, early 2000s, and had his auto steer go down, and he was coming out to help my dad do something on the, like help with the combine or some issue that we had. And Jamie's like, hey, I got to go run to this customer's, get his auto steer back up and running. And my dad's like, can't you tell him to just look out the window? Like, why can't he just look out the window and drive? Well, then I think that winter we had purchased an auto steer unit and started using it. That next spring, my dad had an issue where it went down. My dad called him, said, hey, can't you help me come get this up and running and started? And he said to my dad, like, can't you just look out the window? So I don't know, with a lot of guidance or help from Jamie, I think it's been kind of something that's been going on for quite a few years, and probably even before me, I maybe just am a little more geeky and technical and maybe take it to another level is a good way to put it.
So where was that point, like thinking about your dad and you on the operation, at what point have you gotten like the geekier side of things, or what parts have you taken the lead from your dad and then expanded further for your operation?
I would say, I think it's just even one of those things over time where being younger, a younger kid, like when I was in high school, I really enjoyed agronomy, crop judging in high school, things of that nature. And with farming my own acres, I got really interested in like fungicide timing for small grains, things like that. So I actually kind of the ones that took that on and started doing that when I was younger, and my dad just let me run with it, I guess is a good way to say it. And over time, that just kind of blended into me doing more components of precision agriculture or whatever it might be on the operation. Just as time goes on, you take on more of a role and they slowly transition, I guess is a good way to say it. My dad's still very actively involved in the farm is a good way to put it.
That's really neat. Now, before we get into talking about barley and nitrogen use efficiency, what are some of the ways that you have been using specifically mapping parts of precision agriculture? I mean, I know you use our software, ADMS. You know, how have you used that in different applications and in your farming career?
Yeah, I guess with ADMS, like we put our yield data into it to analyze, because we're trying to utilize zone fertility for prescription creation. So I use ADMS for prescription creation. And then also post-harvest, just to kind of look at, see what we accomplished through the growing season, through analysis and things of that nature, I should say.
It's pretty telling when you take a look at that yield data too, and you can really see where the differences are coming in, and tells you a lot about the fields and everything. Are you writing your prescriptions in there as well?
Yeah. Yep. So I also write my prescriptions in there, and I was also just to add to that, even more telling thing for me. Again, I'm nerdy, so I like numbers, is looking at the soil data. And that oftentimes draws a great picture of, or a great line of, if you're maybe doing things correctly and why, or maybe if you need a change for whatever purpose it might be.
Absolutely. It really helps you kind of drive some of that home, especially when you take a look at those numbers and everything. So you've been doing some pretty interesting things though out there. You raise barley, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And that's kind of a really big piece of your farming operation.
Yeah. I guess malt barley just fits in well. We have some more salinity issues. I wouldn't say issues, but some saline issues, things of that nature. And just barley is a better fit for our farm, I guess, than like growing wheat is, for example.
And you were just actually showing us your Summit Brewing sign in your office and some of those those beer taps. That's awesome. It's very, very telling that a malt guy would be, everyone should support their local barley farmer, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely drink more beer.
And with that too, I mean, like as a malt barley grower, I understand you've got a special relationship with Summit Brewing in St. Paul. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my cousin is the founder, president, and CEO. He founded the brewery in 1986 in St. Paul, Minnesota. They're actually, the new facility that they built in, I think it was 1999, was the first brewery built from the ground up in the state of Minnesota since Prohibition. So it's kind of got a nice, neat little history, similar to Shell's, kind of similar system in Minnesota. It's just a newer brewery, I guess, in terms of history. But yeah, so Mark is my cousin. My wife, son, and I actually just were in the Twin Cities this weekend and visited Mark and Sue and kind of caught up with them and went to the Ratskeller's, their beer hall, and had a pint or two.
That's so fun. So out of curiosity, do you sell most of your barley directly to Summit, or do you have different markets, or?
Yeah, so our barley is contracted through RAR Malting in Shakopee. So we actually produce it for RAR and then gets sent to Summit. We had a variety that was kind of a exclusive variety that we grew that was branded towards Dakota Soul. They use Summit uses it as a blend in their base malt, and they use it in Oktoberfest. A higher portion of the malt bill in Oktoberfest, I should say. Sadly enough, Twins Pils was released from Summit and kind of took over the market on their lager segment for Dakota Soul. So they've kind of shelved Dakota Soul at the moment. So yeah, just it fluctuates kind of depending on the supply and demand type situation.
Absolutely. Who's drinking beer and what kind of beer are we drinking today?
Yeah. And especially in the craft beer segment, the volatility can be extreme, put it that way.
Well, and the craft beer market is just so wide and vast. I mean, you start talking about hazies and sours and, you know, dark beers and everything else. And I'm not a huge, I don't understand everything, but I do like to sample it. but it's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, part of my nerdiness extends into brewing, and I know enough to be dangerous. So it's, I don't know, it's kind of fun to dabble in, because like Germans really hate hazy, or I shouldn't say hate, they don't like hazy beers because it's actually technically an imperfection in the brewing process that causes it, from my understanding anyways. But again, I know enough to be dangerous.
So speaking of that same concept, for folks like such as myself that, you know, aren't around barley that often, what are things that you look for and then also your buyers look for when they're looking at barley quality? And thinking from the context of like, okay, when you're thinking about the next crop and you're thinking about managing things on a precision basis, like how are you using that then to manage these different qualities that your purchasers are looking for at the end of the day?
Yeah, I guess a large component of that would be protein. Just most of your malt contracts will have specifications, whether it needs to be, let's say, 13% protein or lower, or maybe 14.5% protein and lower, just depending on the variety and what the maltster's needs are, or the maltster and or brewer's needs are. So two reasons: the lower the protein for malting, it actually expedites the germination process because it uptakes water faster. So it can help increase throughput through the malt facility. But then also with the brewing side of it, just due to my relationship with my cousin, learned a lot is a good way to say it. But he also explained to me that like a craft brewer is mainly using all malt. So then as an all malt brewer, the lower the protein, the longer the shelf life you have. So if you like, ideally there's a balance. You don't want really low protein, but yet you want, you know, a moderate protein, because also, you know, your protein is through germination, utilizing the enzymatic activity and everything. It's one of those things where a macro brewer is going to use an adjunct product like corn syrup and rice, so they can kind of artificially lower their protein levels, if that makes sense, just by throwing in those adjunct products. So they're maybe less worried and they want more enzymatic activity out of a certain variety. So they'll take more protein and get more enzymatic activity in the brewing process.
That's really cool. So it sounds like the lower the protein for the barley, the faster it's going to germinate for the, the germination process in the malting process?
Yeah, for malting, because that converts the starches to sugars for the brewing process.
And it's like when we talk about malting too, malting would be that step where like they moisten the kernels and then they steep it in like high humidity to have like the germination of the barley's, or like the radicals start to come out of the seed.
Yeah. Yep. Get it to sprout, and then they'll take the sprouts off essentially. And then like they'll sell sprouts into like a feed market, different things like that.
Very interesting.
Isn't it fun when you think about like all the science that goes into like making a beer? So like the next time that you have that cold, refreshing beer, because summer is like not that far away, when you have that, you got to think about all of this science. It's one of the things that I absolutely love about beer.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Well, as an agronomy nerd, like there's Enogen corn, which has a amylase preloaded into it for like silage and different components like that. Oddly enough, in like 2015 or 16, if I remember correctly, there was a new IPA that was created. And I remember correctly, it was in San Francisco. It's called a Brute IPA, but they actually added amylase enzymes in to get all the starches converted.
Huh. Would that be a more efficient barley using, you'd have to use less malt to have the same amount of like sugar at the end?
It's a totally different flavor profile. So that's how they kind of came up with a different style category of an IPA.
Cool. I mean, it's cool. I don't like IPAs, so I'm not going to go out and taste it, but that's super cool.
I am actually starting to get into trying an IPA every now and again. I've been influenced by a couple of gentlemen that tend to drink a lot of craft beers. And so I have been starting to try a couple of IPAs. I can't handle it if it gets super hoppy, but it is really fun though. When you start to think about all the science that goes into how it changes the flavors of everything, it's really fun.
I think it's so interesting too, because like it's a process that's been around for a while, right? Like I remember watching like a documentary as like a college kid, like how beer saved the world. And it's what people used to drink like on a day-to-day basis, right? Because Absolutely. Water wasn't safe mm-hmm. to drink. So you have alcohol yeah. to help kill the bacteria and other things that are living in your water so you can still drink. I mean, it's yeah. cool because like the whole beer making process is this combination of using the compounds that plants give us to make something that, you know, has helped us survive and also now helps us thrive, I guess, in the modern society.
I'd still say that beer can help us survive.
Yeah, I think there actually was a gentleman in Cincinnati that worked for a brewery that for Lent, like a couple of years ago, gave up food and all he did was consume beer. And Ooh. He survived for 40 days and he lost, I don't remember how many pounds. Like he actually lost quite a bit of weight doing it because actually beer has all the essential elements that you need to survive. And yeah.
Oh boy.
Little tidbit of knowledge.
Is that called the North Dakota diet?
No, probably the Minnesota diet. We'll blame it on those guys over there. No.
Okay. So like going back to this protein thing, on the other side of the coin, what are the benefits? Or like, are there benefits to having higher protein barley? Or is it just something because it makes the process less efficient that you do want to stay away from the higher protein barley?
So they could still utilize higher protein varieties or not varieties, higher protein barley, but it just makes it so much more difficult to work through the malting process and everything that a lot of their processes have to change. So unless it's some emergency or urgency where they have to use it, they're not going to prefer to do it. I'll put it that way, just because of the inefficiencies from it, from what I understand.
All right. So it sounds like everything's set up to have a barley that is 13% or less protein and things work a lot better if it's 13% or below.
Yeah. I would say from my understanding, it just drives a greater efficiency through the malt house brewing process. Everything, including shelf life, like there's a lot of aspects of it that go into it. It's not just one step in the process or one problem, I guess, is a good way to put it.
So going into the field then, what are the things that you look for as a farmer that influence or like what are the things that you control then to manage protein in the final barley that you sell? What are you doing to manage that?
So I guess a big thing is just variable rate nitrogen. We're trying to variable rating all of our nutrients, but the biggest one is nitrogen. And then also just using a Harvest Lab sensor from John Deere to measure protein on a spatial variable basis, kind of like a yield map, and then marrying those two together and just trying to create a homogeneous product through variable rate nitrogen applications.
And let me back up a little bit too. Let's talk about like, what are the factors out in the field that influence protein? Like, is it all variety? How does moisture play into that? Like what are the things that you think about when you think about managing that protein?
And if that's a nitrogen management question, that's okay too.
Yeah.
You know, because where Jody's going with that makes a lot of sense. But like when you're looking at a field and you're trying to figure out why different places might need some different nitrogen rates, what are the things that you think are really influencing that in your fields, in different places of your fields?
Just looking at historical yield data to try to come up with target yields and then utilizing uptake values, looking at soil data. It's really more of an art than a defined science, I guess, is a good way to put it. Varieties through analysis have shown to be a significant player in that. Yeah, so that's the main things, I guess, is just looking at historical yield data and then soil data and just knowledge of the fields, I guess, boots on the ground knowledge of the fields, I should say.
Okay, so again, you're kind of out there in that Rugby, North Dakota area. And so that is definitely prairie pothole country, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you probably are dealing with some areas around sloughs and that sort of stuff that probably has salt areas down there. And sometimes I'm sure it can be saturated, and I'm sure in droughtier years, those salts feel very intense to the plants because there's not a lot of moisture there to dilute them. Likewise, I'm sure you've got, we think topography and elevation change in North Dakota by and far and away is kind of a humorous thing to think about since North Dakota tends to be fairly flat. But nonetheless, compared to the Red River Valley, you have probably a little bit more elevation out there, right? And so you probably have some hilltops and some drought and those sorts of things. So on those sandy hilltop areas, how do you think about that nitrogen differently than maybe in those salty areas? And do you soil sample too? Do you soil sample down to like that two foot depth at all? Or?
Yeah. Normally 18 inches, try to do 2 foot right away when we pick up land kind of thing to get a different understanding, ideally, and then spend 18 inches more recently. And I guess like managing the topography component of it, again, it comes back to trying to delineate those in variable rate maps and doing a better job of managing your expectations, I guess is a good way to put it, because I'm not necessarily trying to reduce my inputs by using variable rate fertility. I'm just trying to allocate my resources correctly to do a better job. So with that being said, in those sandier hilltops, maybe I need to reduce my yield expectations with my target yield, or maybe I need to increase it, just depending on what history kind of gives me as a guideline, I guess is a good way to put it.
Absolutely. What do you kind of feel without, I don't want to ask too personal of questions, and some guys don't like saying, well, this is my average yield on the farm, but I'm going to ask, what would you say are some of like your span for yield variability across some of the fields that you're thinking of?
Like field specific fertility or just a whole farm, I guess, just to clarify.
Well, I'd pick a field out that in the back of your mind that you know really well. And then, you know, pick out a field that you know well, and tell us a little bit about the variability, about how the yields are kind of variable in that area.
Yeah, I guess like one example, I'm just looking at a field that I'm working on for our farm. Yield varies from, in a barley crop plan, from 106 bushel target yield, 106.7 to 77 bushels, just depending on the zones. And looking at the, like the last zone that has the 77 bushel target yield, it has a pH at 8.2, P and K are a little lower, a little more difficult, but then my sodium level is 1363 PPM. My magnesium is 1152. My calcium is 5053. Salts are 4. So I mean, you can kind of see the issues there. I'll put it that way.
What's your percent sodium on that?
Give me 14.4.
That's very high. Okay.
Yeah, for base saturation. But that's less than, that's about 4% of the field is that zone, if that makes sense.
And so just an aside here, 77 bushels in a zone that has 14% sodium, and then
that's actually pretty impressive for a yield goal.
Yes,
for that kind of sodium out there.
And that's just using normalized yield, historical yield data is what I'm utilizing to come up with that.
That's one of the best ways that you can come up with yield goals for your zones too. Use your historical yield data, try to normalize it over a number of years. That can really help set some very realistic yield goals. So that's really great that you're doing it that way.
Absolutely. And just an aside too, like thinking back to these challenging places for folks across this region that do deal with salinity, that's an amazing example of what you can do even in these challenging areas with the right crop choice, such as using a crop like barley to grow in these challenging areas. They do grow. And I think you right here are a great example of showing that they can yield.
Yeah, and also just to add, the better producing zone, that's 106.7. Like the soil data, the organic matter is better by at 0.8, but 3.3 compared to 2.5 in that poorer zone. And then pH is 6.8. And then your P and K levels are higher, which is you can expect. Magnesium is only 294, calcium is 1900, sodium is 16. So it's just a significant difference in the numbers with everything, and base saturation sodium is 0.5.
So a huge difference in that percent sodium in the salt for those areas versus the not, which I think goes back to Sarah's point, I think, is when we talk about prairie pothole reek country, there's a lot of variability that we got to work with.
I kind of wanted to bring that up and have that conversation because I don't know where the listeners are going to be from for this podcast. And I think it's important for some places that might be downloading outside of North Dakota, Northern Minnesota, Montana, that they have the chance to kind of think about some of these soils that we're talking about.
Yeah. So like on that same subject too. So like thinking about, okay, so we've got variability here in terms of salt level, no salt level, probably some topography differences in just of like kind of muddier areas around sloughs versus like hilltops that might have more sand or more coarse material. How do those different zones or like soil types in a field affect final protein? And I know too, like this comes back to like a nitrogen management question as well, but like, is there any trend of like, okay, if you've got a more wet area, protein is typically X or is lower than the average, or if you're on a hilltop, does that vary? Like I think about it in wheat, right? Like hilltops, you dry out a little bit and there's a high, you typically have higher protein. Is that the same that follows with barley, or can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess just to add to that, I'd say, especially when you're flat rating, there's a lot more of a issue with what you're describing, just because of the fact that you're probably over applying in your poor producing zones and under applying in your good producing zones. So you're going to have a higher range of protein variability across the field, where in theory with variable rating, if your target yields are kind of, for lack of better terms, in line with what you're trying to accomplish, then your protein has more of an ability to stay homogenous because you're not over applying or under applying. So you're kind of trying to meet reality, I guess is a good way to put it. So to me, you see a larger variability and larger issues with flat rating, where if you're able to variable rate, it kind of hopefully eliminates those problems.
Well, that is really an interesting thing to think about when we're talking about variability in fields and how we've got these differences in salts and sodium and prey pothole region, and how that leads to the differences in protein. And it really sounds like there's a big drive to try to get that protein to be homogenous for that one field. You know, we can certainly wrap our heads around the fact that that yield might differ across the field, but we really got to have that protein to be homogenous so that we get that quality going into the maltsters the way that they're asking for it. So this is probably a good place to kind of stop right here. We'll wrap it up for this episode, but come on back again, because we are going to talk even more about malting barley, nitrogen, field variability, and we're going to talk about how Josh is using nitrogen in a variable rate standpoint to manage that nitrogen to get homogeneous protein in his fields. No, I can't wait to get in the fields again.
Let the geeks at GK Technology help you with your agricultural data. Their agronomists know agriculture. When it comes to creating soils and zone maps to maximize yields in your fields, you can trust the people with decades of experience in site-specific agriculture. Everyone at GK Technology has a background in agriculture, so they know what makes a farm run, and they speak your language. The geeks at GK Technology have a map and an app for that.